All of the government programs that we don't like are funded by theft. All of the government programs that we do like... Oh, sorry, there aren't any. Government is the reason that healthcare is expensive. Government is the reason you can't go to college. Taxation is theft.
And welcome back to Taxation is Theft, the show that talks about all the ways the government is ripping you off and stealing your money and using it against you. And today we're actually going to be talking about how they send their employees to your house to harass you and tell you how to run your business and tell you how to run your life and all this other nonsense with forces, with threats of force to back it up. Of course, broadcasting live on Facebook and YouTube from an underground bunker deep within the jungles of Mexico, I'm Dan Taxation is Theft Berman, former candidate for president of the United States, currently in the race for governor of Texas. And today I have a good friend, Blake Roeder, who actually just got a visit from the state board of health. I don't know, board of whatever. It's the government. They all suck. All the departments are the same. And we're going to hear the story of how that went down. And it's actually really amazing. And we've got a little bit of video footage, too, that we're going to show. So that'll be cool. But of course, before we get started, if you're watching the live stream, please make sure to like and share and comment and ask your questions and start a watch party and invite your friends. If you hate wearing masks, you're definitely going to want to watch this. We're going to see some really interesting stuff. If you own a business, you're definitely going to want to watch this too. And of course, head over to taxationistheft.info and help us out by buying some swag. All the swag you buy goes to fund our counter-propaganda campaign to make sure we can end taxation around the world. Yes, around the entire flat world. Don't get me started on that. And of course, head over to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/taxationistheft. There's all kinds of bonus content over there, campaign videos that you're really going to like, things like that. And make sure you subscribe over there. But... okay, that's it. On to the show. Blake, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Awesome.
Just living life, trying not to get hassled by the state, of course.
Yeah. They're ugly. So, and so this is interesting. I don't even know where to begin with this. So, well, let's just give the backstory. So, there you were, minding your own business. Literally.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened?
Yes. So, little bit of backstory really quick. My mother owns a dance studio and I also own a dance studio and they're about 15 minutes apart, but we kind of collaborate on various things. So I just happened to be over at her place, which is attached to her home, which was a big zoning issue 30 years ago. And she had to fight the government just to be able to do it in the first place. But I was over there just, as I normally am on Tuesday mornings. And I was out in the backyard talking to my dad about, you know, whatever. And my mother comes to the back door and yells at us. And she's like, something we couldn't understand, but I think she said, there's complaints. And we were like, what? What is that? What are you talking about, complaints? So we went up to the studio, which is entering from the back. And then I go in and then there's this lady sitting in the studio, and she is, and my mother's sitting there, and she has her mask on, which is not normal because she doesn't usually put on a mask. And my dad was in there too, with his, well, once we got in there, he, I guess, pulled his shirt up. I refused to wear it because I'm like that. And so she was basically laying out, 12 complaints, anonymous complaints that she had received supposedly from customers of hers, people who already are paying to be in the building that they are complaining about being in, apparently. And so she said, well, I'm here to educate you, which was a really creepy thing to say. And so
well, I already learned math in one of your schools, so I think we're good.
And so I just kind of, you know, they had already been talking before I got in there. So I kind of came in a little bit late. And I'm not sure what was said before I got there, but it was basically one of those things where they don't really want to say what they're really there for. She was just kind of like, beating around the bush. Well, we've had some things. I'm just wondering, I just want to ask you some questions and just educate you a little bit on, you know, the regulations as per the executive order by Governor Ralph Northam. And I'm in Virginia, so we have, I like to call him Lord Northam because he is sort of like our feudal lord. or Governor Blackface. That's another good one because he, we didn't know if he was in the KKK outfit or the blackface, one or the other. But we do know he did a Michael Jackson dance competition in which he also wore blackface. I don't know why he offered that up to the world as information, but that's kind of who we're dealing with and where everything is being, wow. All the commands are being, distributed from. So yeah, that's basically the overview of what happened. We had a bit of a conversation. I said some things, she said some things, and then I ended up leaving because I had to go. And I'm not sure of the outcome after I left, but my mother told me I need to relax. So it must have been peaceful. She must not have broken out her handcuffs and done anything, even though she was a former cop.
I agree with you. We should relax because, you know, when you get excited and you start making Molotov cocktails, you start spilling things and you set your house on fire. So you got to be very calm when you make those. I'm just kidding. Of course, nobody's making Molotov cocktails. Wink, wink. But actually, like I commented on that because you sent me a couple videos and I'll play them in a second here. But I commented on that because you were actually like really doing a good job of keeping your cool. And this is something that's super important where, like, even though we know these people are in the wrong, like, we have to understand that, like, when you're calm and cool and you tell them something that they might not have heard before, then they'll actually be more open to listening. Whereas if you start yelling and say, you fucking pig, get out of here, then that's when they get defensive and they're like, oh my God, I'm so glad I do my job, because if it weren't for me, all these crazies would be running around coughing Corona all over everybody. And like, you know, it makes us seem like the crazy ones or the violent ones, when really it's them who are peacefully acting in violence. Let's actually do that. I'm gonna hop over here and see if I can play this. And you might not hear the sound, but I'm just gonna play the two videos. And the viewers should hear the sound. Let's see. All right. So this is the woman right here. That's she's from the health department.
She's from the Virginia Department of Health.
Okay, Department of Health. Let's see what she has to say.
So is Miss Jennifer, and they're due here shortly. And
well, can I just say one thing? Yes. That I think, you know, whatever your investigation is, we are not responsible or required to assist you in that investigation. So I don't feel that we really owe you anything in terms of information or explanation or justification, unless you are here to enact some sort of arrest or to serve me with a fine or to bring down some tyrannical order from Lord Northam himself, then I don't see why you're here. Because these are just pieces of paper. They don't specify any information that...
No, I'm good. I'm listening.
There's no information on these papers that has any evidence of any particular crime committed. No victim. Who is the victim in this situation? Is it you?
The public.
Okay, well, the public chooses to be here through a voluntary
agreement. And it's private. So it's not public.
You cannot. It's so communicative about everything.
Okay, so this was the first clip. And so you're basically explaining to her that she brought some paper, which, like, you know, you ask the question, are you accusing us of a crime? Which apparently she's not. She just brought you some paper. Who's the victim? If anybody, probably the animal that was living in the tree that was cut down to make this paper. And you're your, it's funny, you called him Lord, whatever his name is.
Northam, yeah.
Northam, yeah. I don't tend to remember these people's names because they're insignificant to me. But so you're now this is already really interesting because she's in your place. She doesn't have a warrant. She has some paper, and it's like, okay, what the fuck do you want me to do with this? Like, do I have to go with you? Are you suing me? You know, what's going on here? And she says, like, she says, who's, or she says, you ask who's the victim, and she says, the public.
Mm.
Well, so yeah. Then you should have, and this is prerequisite for a warrant, you should have a declaration under penalty of perjury by a member of the public that you harmed them. And
right.
To your point, if they come to your studio and they see that you're not enforcing any mask mandate of any sort, they can leave. You're not going outside and pulling them in and saying, ha ha ha, you're coming into my studio and I'm going to force you to learn ballet.
yeah.
That's not what's going on here. They come to you. And so the fact that she even has a complaint is weird because that means somebody came and probably sat through a class and like went through the whole class and then left and then like called the Department of Health. Like that sounds totally like if you're really that worried, wouldn't you just leave and not go there? And like, I don't know. That seems totally crazy.
It is crazy, and it's crazy because, you know, the studio is not a walk-in type of business. You don't have random people coming to take random classes like at, say, a yoga studio downtown. This is basically 100% membership-based. These kids come every week, and they pay a monthly fee to come every week, and everybody in the studio are people that we've known for years. There's very few new people. Every year there's new people, but there aren't like, there isn't huge turnover. You tend to have clients, you know, long-term, several years in advance, because kids, you know, they grow up, they do this level, next level, such and such and so forth. So it's like your friends, you build, like the whole business is based on building relationships with people and you get to know them. And so it's like the idea that somebody who is willingly coming there is then reporting you to the Department of Health is bizarre. And what's more bizarre is that you have no idea who it is. They say, we have 12 complaints, and they'll show you the complaints. And I look through each one of them. And it's all the same. It's like none of it is individualized at all. It's like, you know, children are not wearing masks. Then you turn the page. It says, children are not wearing masks. Turn the page. It says the same thing over and over again. There's no specificity to these complaints. There's nothing to point to who it was. And to be honest with you, you know, what I should have asked, what I should have brought up at the time was, you know, how do we know these are even our customers at all? You tell us that, but this could be the, you know, a dance studio down the street who wants to sabotage us and is making all these false claims. There's no way for us to know. There's no evidence of anything. So what am I supposed to do with this? You know, and they won't tell you who it is. They won't tell you any details about it, just that it was your customers. Well, you don't even know that. You know, 12 complaints, you know, and yes, we were not enforcing the mask mandate because if you really read into the paperwork that they send you, you don't have to. For exercise facilities, it said masks are not required during exercise. So
well, there you go. And Tim was just asking in the comments, does the dance studio fall under any specific state health laws?
Well, honestly, we think it's exercise facilities, but we don't know because the word dance studio never appears in any of the documentation or any of the legal wording of the executive order. We just sort of guessed which category we're supposed to be in, but it's almost like they forget we exist, which is a good thing from a regulatory perspective because there are no regulations on dance studios, but we also don't really know what the rules are because no one specifically told us.
Right. I'm looking right now for laws regarding. So do you and feel free to take the fifth if you don't want to answer this publicly, but do you have a business license? Like, are you required to? Do you have one? What's the situation there?
Well, my business, which is not the one in question right now, even though I'm sort of own my mother's business partly too, my business is in a different county than hers. In her county, business licenses are not required, but in the county that I am, 15 minutes down the road, a business license is required. So I think they sent me a letter recently saying I need to pay my business registration fee, or if that was the LLC. Anyway, I haven't paid it for this year, but I did get something in the mail that said that my LLC will expire at the end of the month if I don't pay it. So I think that's what that is. So I kind of have a business license, but I kind of might not soon.
Yeah. Well, because the reason that I ask is, and let me actually go back to, I'm not an expert on Virginia law for sure, but this is, so I just typed in health inspections in Virginia, and one of the codes that came up was under the alcohol, behavioral health and development services, protection of consumers, licensing providers of behavioral health and development services, inspections. All services provided or delivered shall be subject to review or inspection at any reasonable time by any authorized inspector. So basically, in this particular case, and obviously this isn't the license you would have, but often what they do is they write into the code, oh, if you have this license, we now have the right and the authority to stop by at any time and inspect and do whatever we want.
Right.
But what's interesting about this, and I've heard Dave Champion talk about it, where, you know, he talks about most businesses are not required to have licenses, but licenses are what compel you to start paying things like sales tax and inspection taxes and force you to have inspections. What's interesting about this is I think he related it to the idea that there's the difference between a direct tax and an excise tax, and a direct tax on individuals is not legal, especially according to federal law. You read through the Constitution, it tells you a direct tax is on the states, apportioned by the population, but it's a direct tax on the states. And everything else, the income tax included, is an excise tax. And an excise tax is an excise on a privilege, not a right. And a privilege is something that you do that engages the state that you wouldn't otherwise be able to do without the state. So, for example, if you're importing and you're using the government's port, then it is a privilege because it's theirs. If you have a dance studio, you're not getting anything from the government. They're not like... they're not providing you anything. Like, they didn't build the building. They're not providing the electricity, or probably that's coming from like a private company. There's nothing that they're doing that gives them the right to say, oh, well, that's a privilege and therefore an excise, and therefore we can tax and regulate it. And so to me, that's what I think is what we should be looking at here. Is that question of, do you really even need a license? Because once you get that license, and it's the same thing with driver's licenses too. Once you have a driver's license, you have a contract with the state. And if you make a turn without using your blinker, that's not a crime. You haven't harmed anybody. And even if that's a civil matter, as in some cases, in some states, they don't make it a crime to make it a civil matter. It's just a lawsuit for money. You can't go to jail for it, right? In any normal civil case, unless we have a contract, you need to show that I actually caused damage to you, which if I made a turn without using a blinker, there's no damage done. So what they're really doing is they're leveraging the contract that you have, the driver's license, to say, oh, you owe us money. And they do the same thing with a business license. And I'm wondering how much of that is at play here if you have a business license that they can just come into your place and say, hey, we're going to do such and such.
Well, it could have something to do with the fact that her business is a C corporation, and because you also have to, even though she doesn't have a business license with the county or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, you're roped in with the, what is it called? State Corporation Commission. You're, you know, all your stuff is listed through that. So you're, you know, whether you have the license or not, they're going to license you in some kind of way. I mean, anytime they put you on a list, or a registration of some kind, that's sort of like a license. I mean, you do have to pay fees to keep your corporation, you know, recognized by the state. You do have to pay all these taxes, and she, having a C corporation, has to pay corporate taxes. So she's, you know, corporate income tax and personal income tax. You know, so if you pay yourself, you pay your tax on yourself, and you pay the tax on the business income, and it's all this stuff. So I'm sure that they just, she's been around for 40 years. They've got her in the system. As far as all the contract stuff, I agree with all that. I just wonder if the state cares. That's the thing. It's like, you can tell them, you know, you can argue something that makes perfect sense, but a lot of times they just simply don't believe that. They don't even care. They just go about the way that they have been told by their superiors they can go about, you know.
Right.
The idea that they can, and as for like whether they can enter the space or not, I don't know. I wasn't there when she was let into the building. And in fact, I think she just walked in. And if it was just me, you know, my mother is not as radical as I am. She's right. Pretty cool, but she doesn't have quite the lust to own
get
the state
fuck out of here. The come same back with way. The warrant.
Yeah, yeah. She doesn't want to like slam the state agents the way that I do. So I wasn't really in full control of that situation, and I think she was a little bit rattled and a little bit nervous by all of it. Because why wouldn't you be? You know. She's you know, in her late 60s. She shouldn't really be stared down and interrogated, you know. Right. And they did do that. They asked her all kinds of questions about, you know, are you enforcing this? Are you enforcing that? How many people do you have in here? And all this kind of stuff. And we kept trying to, and I think you may have heard that on the video. My dad even said at the end, he was like, well, this is not the public. This is private. You know, this is private property. We're not in the public. And I don't think they care. That's the sad part. It's like, you can have these nuanced interpretations. I just wonder how much of it is recognized by them.
Well, I think, you know, in this particular case, we're dealing with, you know, there's no warrant. There's no warrant here.
No.
So it's kind of, I suggest everybody go watch this movie, by the way, Vampires Versus the Bronx, which was really awesome. It's on Netflix right now. But they did this, like, you know, like the whole thing with vampires, right? They're not allowed in unless you invite them in. And it was really interesting because, I mean, the police do this all the time. And they've become experts at this, right? When you get stopped, they say things like, well, do you mind if I search your car? And you can say, yeah, I do mind. You can't search my car. They're asking for permission. They don't have probable cause. They don't have a warrant. But they're probing, and then they'll say things like, well, you're not hiding anything, are you? And as soon as you give them permission, they're in your car, they're going through all your stuff. And it's kind of the same thing. If your door is open and it looks like you're open to the public, then they can just walk in and say, oh, well, it's open to the public. If it's not, and if you inform them that it's not, they should leave. But, and this is really interesting because it, there was a video of these guys that owned a restaurant, and I don't know if you saw this. It came out a few days ago, and there was the health inspector and like three sheriff's deputies, and they were in there. And eventually they said, yeah, you need to leave. You're on private property. You're trespassing. You need to leave. What's interesting is once they started saying that, that's when they actually started leaving, because they realized, okay, we don't have a warrant, and as much as we believe we have the right to be here, we don't have a warrant. And we kind of need to set this barrier, right? We need to draw a line in the sand and say, look, if you're going to order food and eat, but you can't conduct business here unless you go get a warrant, because we do not want you here and we don't believe you belong here. And like, this is like this is the thing, right? If you were actually in violation of some health code or something, they would have an actual complaint. They'd probably send you a letter. They'd probably say, you owe us money. They'd probably say, blah, blah, blah. If you want to dispute it, here's how you would go about it. And that sort of thing. But here they just came, and it's almost like the purpose was just to maybe it's not enforceable in your business, but they're just there to try to get you to willingly enforce it in your own business. Okay, yeah, we can't actually send them a fine. We have no power. Let's just send people to all the businesses and see if we can talk them into following, to falling in line with this unenforceable order.
Well, I wonder how enforceable it is, because what wasn't on the video is a little bit later. She did sit down and say that, she was coming out to just review the complaints, and that, if she had to come back to enact any kind of suspension, she did use that word, then, that would be something that she would deal with at a later, how they do. They wrap it in this sort of very euphemism-laden speech where you don't really know. And, so she did kind of hint at the fact that, yes, we can enforce this. I don't know if that's true. She is a former police officer, and we know how police officers use rhetorical devices, as you mentioned a minute ago, to get you to incriminate yourself. And that's what I told her. I'm like, you're just manipulating us to talk, to try to incriminate ourselves somehow so you can enforce something on us. Are you going to arrest me, or what are you going to do? Because if you're not going to arrest me, then you can leave. So it's hard to say. I don't know how binding these executive orders are, because this is ultimately a result of Ralph Northam's executive order, where he laid out the three phases that we go through for the opening and all this crap. And so we're still in phase three, and we're supposed to operate at 75% capacity, whatever that means. I don't even know what the capacity of my building is, nor do I really care, because I'm going to operate how I operate, and that's what my customers want. They're all like, yes, we're behind you. Don't give in. I've already notified them that, we're under the thumb of the health department, and that I might have to make some changes about how we do business around here. I'm going to block out the windows so they can't come to the parking lot and see inside. There's a few things I can do to make it look like I'm enforcing it more than I really am, just in case they show up unannounced. But even if they do, I'm going to tell them to leave. So if it is in my business, which I'm sure they're going to find out, if they come to my mother, I'm less stringent than my mother is. So, if she's in trouble, I'm going to be in trouble. So it's just a matter of time before they show up here. And I'm not going to be nearly as accommodating and as nice as she is. So we'll see how much they can really enforce. Cause I already told my people, look, if they have to leave me out here in handcuffs, that's just going to be what it is. So just be aware that I'm not going to close and I'm not going to enforce a mask mandate on a 5-year-old child. Cause that's what they just changed it to. It used to be 10 kids, 10 and up, and now it's 5 and up. And they're saying, in all indoor spaces. So I don't know if they revoked the part where exercise facilities don't have to have mask wearing or not. It's all very vague. So who really knows what they're enforcing, what they can enforce, and how far that would really go. But we'll see if they show up again.
Yeah, and I mean, this is, I've showed a few examples of this where, here's one that I remember from a long time ago, when I used to get jury duty things, right? I don't get these anymore because I don't have a driver's license, as much as I'd love to go serve jury duty, because I see the benefits for that now, whereas before it was like, I don't want to fucking hang out at the court all day and get paid 3 cents per mile and all this, it's a huge burden. But now that I see how fucked up it is, I totally recommend people to go do jury duty. But the point is, they would send me these notices. This was in California, and I think I got a federal one that was more or less the same thing. And I would get it, and, I had just turned 18, 19, and my dad would be like, yeah, well, you better go, or else, they can fine you $10,000. And I'm like, that sounds like slavery. I have to go work for them, or else I can be fined? That doesn't sound like America. This doesn't sound like a free country. And so I looked at this thing, and sure enough, at the bottom, it said, blah, 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 $10,000. And I'm like, holy shit, man. And for some reason, I had that freedom fire inside of me. So I was like, that doesn't make any sense. So I read it a few more times and a few more times until I finally understood what it said. They can't fine me if I don't show up. It says if I don't show up, Then they can summons me to court, which means they have to send a sheriff to my house to serve me in person a document that will then schedule me for a hearing at the court that I would have to appear to and explain to them why I couldn't make jury duty. And if I fail to appear, then I can be fined $10,000. Not even if I fail to explain, if I fail to appear. And it's like, this is exactly what you're talking about. How much of this is enforceable, and how much are you just saying, oh, if I have to come back, if we have to enforce, if we have to do this, if we have to do that. Well, can you actually do any of that? Do you actually have the authority for any of that? Probably not. And this is like, it's such a big piece of the manipulation, because that fear alone, just like with the jury duty thing, how many millions of people, probably across the entire country, who get a very similar notice, are afraid that if they don't show up for jury duty, they might be forced to pay $10,000, which most of America, it would completely destroy them if they had to pay $10,000 for not going to jury duty.
Yeah.
They're already living paycheck to paycheck. They already have a huge amount of debt. And most people believe this fear, even though that's totally not the case. So now they're doing the same thing with executive orders, which I say with executive orders, I don't work for you. You can't order me to do anything. But here's what's interesting. This comes down to a piece of this comes down to a part of how the government operates that I don't like. Not that I like any of how the government operates, but this particular piece, Congress is supposed to be making laws. And what they've done is they said, you know what? We've got too many laws. We can't manage all these laws. Let's delegate that to the executive branch. So now you have agencies like the health department and the legislatures, the legislators say, well, we're going to create this broad area of things that this is what the agency is allowed to do. And we're going to leave it up to the agency to actually decide which of these things it wants to do and how it wants to enforce these. Now, since that agency works for the governor can executive order that agency to basically change the law. But it still has to fit within what the legislators have created, which still has to fit within the Constitution. So this kind of gets into the area of if you own a business, if you own a restaurant, and that restaurant is regulated by the health department, then yes, an executive order might be applicable. But if we go back to the point of you don't have a business license, you don't have a health certificate because you're not a restaurant, so they're not supposed to be inspecting you, then there's nothing that they can do. There's no regulation that they can change. And they have to actually change the regulation. Like the executive order isn't just like, oh, it's law and they can enforce this. He can order the department to change the regulation and then enforce the regulation. But if they don't change the regulation, there's nothing to enforce. He can also say, oh, there's a mask mandate, and he can order all of his employees, which is everybody in the executive branch, to follow. But if you don't work for the executive branch, you don't work for the governor, that doesn't apply to you. So you still have the confines of the Constitution. Like, how are they going to enforce this?
Well, there's also exemptions in the executive order. And I used that against her because I was the only one not wearing a mask. And she told me, she was like, well, you're not wearing a mask. And I said, well, I don't have to. And she's like, you don't? I said, well, there's a medical exemption in the mask thing. And I have severe asthma, which is true. I didn't lie. So technically, I don't have to wear a mask, and that's the way that is. And she immediately was like, oh, okay. Like, she acted very empathetic, like she's a good person. Like, oh, yes, okay, you are right. Following the rules. Oh, you don't have to wear a mask. But, you know, I don't have to wear a mask because I don't have to wear a mask, not because of the exemption. That's just a convenient way for me to use that against her. But
that's not a
suggestion. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, because with an executive order, how binding is that? And like you said, restaurants, I remember at one point I had toyed with the idea of like opening a coffee shop, never did anything with it, but I did look up the regulations, and yes, things like restaurants and places where you serve food, Then you have to get a Department of Health inspection certificate and all that. For a dance studio, you don't have to have any of that. The Department of Health has never been here or at my mom's place before that. So, you know, I have no contract or no relationship with the Department of Health. There's no paperwork that I've signed. And in fact, they asked us to sign paperwork, by the way, as well. And I don't know what that paperwork was, because I ended up leaving out of frustration before the end of the altercation, because she refused to talk to anybody. I think my mom does, but the lady refused to talk to me at a certain point. She only would talk to my mother. She just would straight up ignore what I said and just turn to my mother and be like, right, I'm going to talk to you. I'm reasonable and he's not. So I'm going to talk to you. And so I was just like, all right, fine, bye. But they were like, you know, here's some papers we want you to sign. And I told her, I said, look, we shouldn't be signing anything without a lawyer present or without legal counsel to review it and make sure it's something we actually have to sign and something we should sign. So I tried, but right, you know, I wasn't in charge of that situation 100%.
This is an interesting thing too. I'm trying to think of who said it, but they'll tell you things like you have to sign this. And it's like, well, if I had to sign it, then I wouldn't have to sign it. Because if I had to sign it, you might as well consider it already signed, and then you wouldn't need my signature. You need my signature.
I see. And yeah, they're already asserting the authority that the signature would be giving them.
Exactly. Like, no, you have to sign this, or else what? Now, with a traffic stop, they'll say, well, or else we'll arrest you, and plenty of times they will. But if it's like you have, I mean, think about it. You get served with a lawsuit. Do they tell you you have to sign it? Nope. They're just like, here, you got it. I'm out. See ya.
Yeah. They just confirm you are who you are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they try to trick you into, oh, okay. And then, so they'll show up in court. And if you don't, they'll say, yeah, well, I gave it to him. I asked him if that's who he was. He said, yes, I gave it to him. That's it. They don't need your signature. If they're trying to get you to sign something, they're trying to create a new contract that then they can enforce on you somehow. They want more power over you. Don't sign anything from the state.
I tried to tell her that.
Yeah, I know. It's difficult. this is interesting, too. I know how mothers are, right? I mean, my mom was kind of supportive of my anarchy, of my anarchist views. But she was also very scared of the government. And, you know, she grew up in a time where people had more faith in the government, but she was also, you know, she was also like, yeah, she kind of thought that the government had something to do with JFK's death. You know, so she was kind of in an interesting area there, but, what was I going to say about that? I don't remember, but let me play the rest of the, this second clip of video here.
That's not a good suggestion.
But you are here right now, yes, as a veiled threat. That is what you are. The Department of Health is a government agency. You are here to ensure compliance. What is that compliance based on? A threat of violence. That you, as a police officer, know very well that your role as an enforcer is ultimately, and you can laugh at me, one, but your role as a police officer or as an enforcer for the Virginia Department of Health, that organization that is, you know, worthless.
Are you saying that?
This is you coming here and saying in a very nice way, which is manipulative, I'm going to tell you that. You know how to handle it. You're a police officer, an investigator. You know how to trigger people into incriminating themselves, because it's exactly what you do. So I feel that unless you have some sort of actionable legal situation you're trying to impose on us right now, you have no right to be here. This is private property.
I just remembered what I was going to say about mothers, but like, okay, so here you're basically telling her, if you don't have like any actual business here, you have to leave. But also what I think was really interesting was you told her that you're here to threaten us. And I think this is really important, because I love just yelling, fuck the police, and all this other stuff too. But at the same time, it's like, when you do that, they view us as like, oh my God, see, there's all these crazy people out there. Thank God we have this thin blue line, because otherwise these crazies would just be everywhere with all their anarchy. And it does make us lose credibility. But when you calmly explain to them, look, you're here to threaten us. And yes, you're very polite, as you pointed out, but you're here to tell us if we don't do what you say, there's going to be further consequences. You're going to escalate this to either somebody getting arrested, or you're going to take our money. And if we don't give it peacefully, you're going to escalate it further. And I think that's really important that we explain that to them in a way that they're going to be receptive. And I get it. They're not all going to be receptive, but it's, I was reading this book, do I have it with me? It was called From Dictatorship to Democracy. And they were talking about how to overthrow a dictator, which is amazing. But they pointed out, you can't do it by force, because you're always going to be outnumbered and outgunned by the government, which is, you know, we always hear that. So what, you think you're going to use your AR-15 against a tank or an airstrike or any of this stuff? But a lot of the strategies that they do point out is, if you can treat the employees of the state with respect and earn their compassion, you now have people within the government, and this has always been the most effective way to basically castrate the government and turn all of the government employees to the side of, yeah, this is wrong what the government's doing, and I'm going to take those orders, and I'm going to do a really shitty job to make sure that those orders don't get followed. But if you convince them, hey, what you're doing is wrong working for the state, and they just quit, well, guess what? Somebody else, the next person in line, is going to move up to their spot, and they're going to be like, yeah, these people are crazy, and we're going to enforce the state. I do whatever the dictator says. And you just made them stronger, actually. So I think that's really interesting.
Well, that's one perk of my mother being in the room, was that, you know, I did want to keep it under control emotionally, to not completely embarrass the crap out of her. She actually wasn't very upset with me. I mean, I think she really does. I mean, my family are all pretty much like in agreement with the fact that the state gets in our way. She's not as philosophically, you know, engaged as I am in terms of like libertarianism, but, you know, she don't want to be hassled. She wants to do her thing, and my dad is very much like me in these ways as well. Like, he's a little more on the conservative side, but, you know, he was the one taking the video, and he was the one, like, posting it to his friends and stuff. So, like, we're all pretty well aligned, but, yes, keeping it, like, with not having a meltdown is a good thing, but I have to tell you, my adrenaline was, like, I was pumping. I was, like, a little shaky. You know how you get when you're like, ooh, I'm gonna blow, but I didn't. And that's, I think that did help the matter, but she clearly was not very receptive, because as soon as I started like pointing out the gun in the room, how well you could see it in the video, but she did kind of like do a little physical movement where she draws back a little bit and kind of is like perplexed, like, what? You're telling me that I'm, you know, threatening you? And I'm like, yeah, I'm telling you that, and you know that's true. You know it's true. Otherwise, why would you be here? You're not here. You said you're here to educate me. Well, I went to college. Like, I don't need, I got the debt to prove it. I don't need any more education from you, ma'am.
She wasn't armed, was she? Or was she with anybody that was armed?
She was not armed. And she was, didn't have anybody with her. She did say she was a former cop, so I don't know if it was concealed, but she was wearing, you know, what looked like pretty tight clothing. So I didn't see any particular spot where she could have hit a firearm, but no, she didn't bring the police. I think that if I had escalated it and like been like, get out and made her feel, you know, unsafe or whatever, maybe she would have called the cops and maybe there would have been something, but who's to say how far it would have gone? Because in the video you mentioned, the police were there, and I did see that video, one where they started chanting, and they were like, get out. I don't know if the police showed up with the health inspector, or if the health inspector had called the police for backup or not. So it could have gone into one of those scenarios, but luckily she did not feel the need to call the police on us.
I have a feeling, and this is based on, you know, what I've seen with a lot of the CPS videos, that the one with the restaurant, they probably showed up together. And, you know, they do this like when CPS goes door to door, like, oh yeah, we just need to see your kids. No, you don't. Do you have a warrant? Leave. And like, they have police with them, and the police are usually there like, and then like, they'll be like, well, I have a police officer with me. And he's like, come on, lady, don't bring me into this. Like, you know, like he really doesn't want to be there, but he knows, like, yeah, I can't tell him to open the door. If we don't have a warrant, you're just, you know, you've got some papers and you need to see their kid. And it's like, but what's really scary about that is, like, I wonder how many kids are taken by CPS because somebody who just doesn't know says, yeah, my son's right here. And then they're just like, oh, well, and then same thing, just like, we have to see him. We have to take him. And they're just like, what do you mean you have to take him? And they don't know how to say no. They don't know how to say come back with a warrant. And they just let them take their kids. Like, I wonder if that's ever happened. And it's a really scary thought. But the fact that so many people go along with what the government says just because they say, you have to. If I had to, you'd have a warrant. I could go back and get a warrant. I could go back and get a warrant. Well, why didn't you get a warrant in the first place? Mm-hmm. Like, why make two trips if you could?
They trick you into giving consent.
Yeah, it's you're inviting the vampires right in your house. That's such like an amazing like analogy.
There was a case. I remember seeing a case recently. I forget where it was, but CPS showed up and somehow an altercation went down and there was some sort of accusation of the child being, I guess, sexually molested. I don't know who made that accusation, but apparently the cops went in and did a search on the child to see if the child was raped, which is basically rape in and of itself.
Right.
And there was a whole big thing. I'd have to go back and try to find it, but I saw it fairly recently where the state basically came in there and molested the child to make sure the parent wasn't molesting the child. And somehow they were duped into, I don't know if they had given them consent to come in out of fear or if they just stormed in or what the circumstance was, but they will find, if they can trick you, they will find a way. And, you know, the lengths to which they'll go is pretty dastardly. And in that case, that's just unthinkable. You would have had to kill me. If it was my kids, I don't have kids, but if they were my kids and you were going to try to come, you know, violate them in that way, I probably would have been ended up dead. So, you know, luckily they didn't.
It really is a shame. And this is what's interesting too. In the US Constitution, it says everybody has a right to legal counsel. And the reason for this is you used to have governments, kings, tyrants, that would just say, this person is guilty of a crime. We're going to take him into a court. And they'd have him stand in the court and, you know, force him to defend himself, not knowing even the vocabulary or the procedure of this court, against a prosecutor who is an expert, who probably helped write, you know, the laws and the rules and everything else, to defend himself, and it was absolutely unfair. And so this is why you have a right to an attorney. It's not because, like, you know, oh, you have a right to for somebody to like come in and fight for you. It's because they know it would be absolutely unfair for you to even try to defend yourself, not being educated in the laws and procedure. And yet,
well, it's hard to even read them.
Exactly.
The language is so convoluted; you don't even know what it means half the time.
And that's a whole other problem. But because I mean, now you're forced to hire somebody who spends like 10 years trying to figure this shit out. Most of them who don't even figure it out, they're just like, oh, well, I went to law school. I know a few things. I can be a lawyer now, which is total bullshit. But you now they're like, okay, we're doing it outside of court. And this is why. This is why the police do what they do. This is why it's so important for them. Like, they actually have this strategy where before they arrest you, they try to coerce you to confess to anything. And they do this before they put you in handcuffs on purpose. Because once they put you on in handcuffs, they have to read you your Miranda rights. And if they ask you questions without the presence of an attorney, that might get thrown out. But if they can trick you into saying something before they arrest you, then sorry, all bets are off. You admitted to it. You might as well have been walking down the street with a big sign saying, "I'm committing a crime. Come and arrest me." Like that. Like, and they're trained to do that. And some of them know they're doing it. Some of them don't. They just think that's you know, normal police investigation. But it's absolutely disgusting what they're doing, because they're taking advantage of people who don't know any better. Like, you and I are, you know, we know this stuff. We've for whatever took us down this path, we started learning these things, and we understand that we have rights and that we have to assert them. Otherwise, they'll be trampled. But for so many other people, they fall for this shit because they just don't know. And it's an absolute shame that in a free country where we're supposed to have peace and justice and liberty for all, we have none of that.
Yep. It's pretty sad. It's pretty sad because a lot of people are, you know, you can't expect everyone to be super interested in political philosophy. You know, we shouldn't have to live in a world where, you know, you have to go down this deep libertarian rabbit hole to understand, you know, what the state can and can't do to you. You know, a lot of people have lives that are centered around other things, and they just get swept up in it. It's a very, very sad thing.
Right.
Very sad.
Yeah, like, okay, you want to buy a house? Okay, you can go do some reading up on mortgages and loans and how they work and all this other stuff. And that's fine, because it's not like you can just be walking down the street and a bank's going to pull up behind you and say, "Oh, you need to have one of these," right? That doesn't happen. So you can train yourself going in. But when it comes to the law, it's like you can be walking down the street and a police officer comes up and it's like, "I didn't prepare for this because I didn't expect for this to happen." And
people don't know how to deal with the police either.
Yeah.
That's a big thing. Just in how you react to police, even if you don't talk to them, can have huge implications. You know, I was at one of those protests. I was there just to observe and see what was going on. I was open carrying a 9mm at the time, and I was just looking around, and the police, you know, started getting antsy, and they started to like run down people and chase them and stuff. And it's funny how the predator and prey instinct gets sort of triggered in people. Like, I saw this person with a sign, and he was, of course, yelling at the police and calling them names and stuff, which is fine with me. But he was, he saw them, and the police started to like mosey on towards him, and then they just started to run. And the guy with the sign turned around and started running. And it's like, that's evading the police. That's gives them the justification to throw you to the ground, start beating you, which is exactly what they did. And then they turned around to me. And the guy yelled, he was like, "This is an unlawful assembly. You're open carrying. What are you doing?" He almost ran me down. And I just put my hands up calmly and just sort of strolled away, turned my back to him and started walking away, because there's video cameras everywhere. They know if there's someone's walking away from them with their arms up before they've chased them, they can't do anything. And so I got out when if I had stood my ground and they were running after me and I started running, they would have tackled me and I probably would have been charged with some sort of felony something, because they did say, like, "You're committing a felony." So it's just a matter of like, you have to keep your cool so that they can't use you as a, you know, reason to have said, "Oh, the Heath posed a threat. He had a weapon." You know, so, and a lot of people can't keep their calm in moments like that because they don't really know what the right thing to do is.
Right. And that's another thing too. You know, pretty much that exact example. If you're just like standing, you could be standing at a bus stop, and if the police come up to you and say, "Hey, do you mind if we ask you some questions?" If you say no and turn around and walk away, that's okay. And of course, they can follow you, which is, you can say, is harassment, and you can say, "Hey, leave me alone. I don't want to talk to you." But if you turn around and run, that's suspicious. So, and that's so stupid, because it's like, okay, so the manner in which you're walking away gives them cause to then say, "Oh, it's suspicious. We can arrest him now," which means tackle you to the ground, beat the crap out of you, and then start asking you more questions. But What's even more despicable about that is that we see all the time videos of police beating the crap out of people for absolutely no reason. And sure, maybe that's not the norm. Maybe that doesn't always happen. But if you're standing at a bus stop and a cop comes up to you, or even three police cars, and you're not scared shitless, there's something wrong with you. And that is, you know, just like you said, this is our fight or flight instinct to run. And this is what gets me so mad whenever they, you know, when they have someone on the ground, stop resisting, stop resisting. I watched a video the other day of it was one of these protests, and there was a journalist there from the ACLU who was actually recording, and it was over curfew. Oh, it's curfew. And there was another person standing next to the ACLU camera guy. They pointed at the ACLU guy and said, "You're okay, you can stay here because you're ACLU." But then they went to this other guy who was just observing what was going on, standing right next to him. They tackled him to the ground. "Give me your arm right now. Give me your arm right now. Give me your arm." And it's like, have you ever been, like, to the cops, have you ever been on the ground with five guys on your back with one knee in your back and somebody sitting on your head and all the shit going on and all of them are yelling at you and they're saying, "Give me your arm, give me your arm." And like, you're like, "Oh, okay, here's my arm, officer."
No, no, like, problem. I'll just, yeah.
Yeah. Like, are they really that stupid that they think that's how people are going to react?
I just think that they say it because they know that it justifies their actions when they go, "Well, we told him to not to resist."
Right, right.
Like, he was okay.
Resisting. See right there. I said stop resisting. That's proof that he was resisting.
Yeah. And in that moment, how do you know where your arm even is? My arm could be like, oh, you know, who knows what position you're in, and whether, you know, when you have five people like yelling at you, knee on your back, like you just said, you don't even know where your friggin' arms are. Like, it could be underneath of you. How am I going to get my arm out from underneath me without looking like I'm resisting
with 1,000 pounds of pig on your back?
Like, right.
It's absolutely insane. But yeah, like, what gets me more is that, like, the criminal justice system allows this to happen over and over and over again. Like, at what point are the courts going to say, "Yeah, you know what? We can't side with you fucking cops because what you're doing is absolutely insane. Put yourself in that position." Like, why don't I see lawyers asking the judge, "Put yourself in that position. You're on the ground. You got five people yelling at you. Give me your arm." Put the judge on the ground in the courtroom and get five cops on top of his back and tell him to start doing that and see how well he follows
orders. I don't think
that'd
go over too well, but
it's actually, but I mean, like, but it's like, because, wait. I mean, if this is normal, why wouldn't you get on the ground and let five cops get on your back? You know you're not going to jail. You know you're not really getting arrested. Yeah. So why not just let them do it? You don't even want to be in that position knowing that nothing bad is going to happen to you. Why?
Right.
What do you think is going through this guy's head when he hasn't done anything wrong and this is going on and he's being yelled at? He's being, like, all this stuff is going on. His adrenaline is going crazy. He can't think straight. He's being yelled at, like, contradictory instructions and all this other stuff. It's absolutely insane. This is like, it's fucking scary, man.
Yeah. Well, I had one other run-in that was elicited that kind of panic situation. I used to live in New York City in the East Village, and apparently somebody had called the police because somebody was supposedly robbing an apartment somewhere in my area. And I had my window open, and I don't have a screen, so it was just open to the courtyard. They came into the back, into the courtyard behind my apartment, and two cops, NYPD, pointed 9mm at me through my window and were like, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" And I'm like, I like didn't even have a shirt on. I was like half naked, and I like dropped to the ground. I was like, "Don't shoot me. Please don't shoot me. Please don't shoot me." And they scared me so much that I didn't really know what to do. And they told me that I was under suspicion for robbing an apartment, which of course was my own apartment. And I was like, "Well, this is my apartment. I live here. Like, can't you tell?" And they're like, "Well, you're going to have to produce some sort of proof that you live here. Otherwise, we're going to take you down to the station." And of course, I'm sure they can't do that. I'm sure that that's not legal. But I was shamed and scared into doing it. This was over 10 years ago, before I really had the same type of confidence I have now with these sorts of issues. But I had to show them my lease and my ID to prove that I lived there so that they wouldn't come through my window and arrest me for robbing my own apartment after they already pointed deadly weapons at me. So this is what they do. And it can happen to anybody. And it's just, it's terrible. And I don't like, you know, I kept it calm because I saw my mother put in fear. You know what I mean? When you see a family member, your mother put in fear from the state, it's like you want to defend her, but you also don't want to cause a scene. And it was just like this, it brings up a lot of emotional stuff that, and a lot of things that are like you said, that fight or flight response, that primal, like, emotional, you know, situation when cortisol is like all these stress hormones are flooding through your system. You can't always know. You can't always be like, okay, sir, I will put my hands behind my back. No problem. Thank you so much for your service today, officer.
Yeah, right.
As they knee
Thanks
you in
for
the,
keeping me safe.
Knee you in the shoulder blade. It's, you know, and it's weird that they expect that is possible. And I think they know it's not. They just, it's a way of saying, well, we did what we're doing. We did our jobs. We're the police. We served and we protected.
Dude, I'm like, okay, I'm thinking back, right? They came in. They've got these documents, right? They say the public is the victim. They have these documents that are supposedly complaints. And who wrote them? And this is what's interesting about that. If real people wrote them, they should have names on them. If they didn't, and maybe you should start pursuing the health department. Find out who this woman is and find out where she got those letters from. Because if those were handed to her by somebody else in the department and somebody else wrote those, that's fraud.
No way to know.
Yeah, right? Because they're going to be like, oh, we don't know where they came from. Well, one of your agents came to my business, my house, saying, here are complaints from the public, which were not complaints from the public. I don't care where it came from. It came from that agency, and that the head of that agency can be held personally responsible for that. That is a crime. And if people within their department are doing that and they don't acknowledge that that's being done and they don't do something about it to even stop it, that is criminal. They are allowing that behavior. This is a crime that was committed. If those are not in fact complaints submitted by the public, they are in fact complaints that were fabricated by somebody, then that is fraud. I mean, imagine this. You get stopped by the police and they say, give me your ID, and you give them an ID that's not yours. Isn't that fraud? Can't you go to jail for that?
Probably. I would guess.
So if they are showing you papers that they know is false because they did not come from the public like they say they did, and that's why they don't have names. If I were you, I would pursue that. I would find out what those papers were and where they came from.
Well, I would like to know how actionable those complaints are anyway, because if you do have the health exemption, I mean, I'm not qualified to make a determination as to what someone's health condition is or is not. And that's what I tell my people at my studio. I wrote in the email, I said, look, if you don't wear a mask, I am going to assume you have a medical condition exempt under the executive order. I am not qualified to make a determination on your personal health, nor is it my business. Thank you very much. So who am I to determine whether those kids who were not wearing masks, as it said in the complaint, who is anybody to determine whether they are in compliance or not? Because aren't there HIPAA laws that prevent me from knowing your personal medical history? I can't require you to submit your medical records to me, can I? So I think it all breaks down. I don't think it would really hold up if you had a real like trial over this. I really don't think it would.
Right. But I think at the same time, they wouldn't be able to have a trial against you, but you might be able to have a trial against them if they're basically extorting you with fraudulent papers that their agents are saying are actual complaints.
I think it's a good idea to look into that. And I might swing over to my parents' house and be like, Mom, can I look at those papers that she gave you? Because I think she let her keep the paper.
Nice.
Because she told us we could keep it. So I wonder, that would be something to look into to see, like you know,
do a FOIA request or shit. Even, I mean, even if you opened a lawsuit against that department, then you could subpoena, you know, whatever documents you needed. And yeah, that's really fucking interesting. I would love to see that play out because that would be, I mean, shit, even if it doesn't go anywhere, that would be,
they'd probably end up dropping the case. It's probably not worth it for them to go through all that rigmarole to get there. Well,
they, I mean, can't it even drop happens. The case. You have to drop the, cause you're the plaintiff.
Or would they, would the judge dismiss it or something? Or no,
they can ask the judge.
If they came after me, like, let's say they came after me and then I came back with this sort of countersuit of like fraud or whatever, you know, if they were the ones who were kind of in the hot seat from their own investigation, they might throw it out. I don't know. That stuff, that's kind of beyond my pay grade, but I would have to look into that. That's very, would be interesting to contest.
How far are you from Virginia? No, from.
I'm in Richmond, right outside of Richmond, Virginia.
I mean, sorry, did I really just say Virginia?
I'm literally on top of Virginia.
I meant to say the name of a city, but now I'm thinking like where, okay. So I've got a friend who's a lawyer in Virginia and now I can't think of what city it is. I want to say Norfolk, but that's probably not it. So I got to find out, but I want to see if he'll do me a solid and help you out in looking into this. Cause that would be fucking epic.
Yeah. That would be fun.
It would be a small win against the state, but that would be pretty awesome. And okay, so something, I'm going to go back a second to the time when you were in the apartment and the police came, because I know a lot of people would say, well, don't you want to help the police find the actual burglar? Sure. So wouldn't, like, okay, yeah, just show them your ID and, you know, prove that, okay, you're not the right person and they should look in the next apartment. Maybe. My concern with that would be that those guys are always on a fishing expedition, right? So even if you said, look, here's my ID and here's my, you know, proof that I live here, they're still going to call on the radio and say, okay, yeah, so I have here's the ID number. Can you look it up and see if there are any warrants?
Yeah.
They're always on a fishing expedition. So it's kind of like, I don't know.
When they maybe stop you for a tail light.
Yeah. It's like, maybe if they weren't dicks, then I would like help them out. But it's, you know, like the actual burglar might be gone, or maybe they're going to assume that the actual burglar is gone. And so now while we're here, let's just go on a fishing expedition. Yeah, sorry. And I would love to be able to trust cops. I would love to be able to help them out. But the reality is that's not the world that we live in. And they're going to need to do some really hard work to earn back that reputation that deserves our help.
Yeah, and I did pursue that with the Civilian Complaint Review Board. I ended up having to go to like some back room in a giant building, just like this bureaucratic dungeon, to have an interview with somebody about it and told them what happened. And it was like weeks and weeks went by and they were like, yes, we have successfully added this to the record on the police officers in question. And no disciplinary action will be taken. Thank you so much for your feedback. You know, so they, even their procedures to redress these grievances tend to be dead ends that are symbolic at best.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely insane. And it's a joke. And those citizen review boards, I think the one I looked into in San Antonio was, they were actually supposed to be made up of 6 police officers and 6 civilians. And that was supposed to be the civilian review board. Which is like, that's weird. Okay.
I guess if they're not in uniform, they're also civilians.
Right. But, and to get it to that board, you still had to go through this whole process where they have to first they have to accept the complaint. And I've seen this a million times, video footage of somebody in the police department, I want a form so I can fill out a complaint. And they'll say, well, what's the complaint about? Who's the officer against? And blah, blah, blah. They'll ask you all these questions like, I don't feel comfortable talking to you. I just want the form so I can fill it out. They don't want to give you the form because in some places once you submit the form, they have to go through the process, and they don't want to go through. So they're just going to intimidate you out of filing your complaint.
Yeah, bureaucrats are going to try to do as little work as possible, as we know.
Yeah, it's nuts. Anyways, all right, we're at the end of the show. I want to give you an opportunity to plug whatever you want to plug. You want to plug the studio?
Well, I'm not going to plug the studio because that's a local business. I like to keep my libertarian stuff a little bit separate from that particular thing. But I will plug my YouTube channel and website. You can go to individualist.tv, which has most all my videos. I'm still adding the rest of them on there right now. But if you go to YouTube, just type in individualist in the channel search and I'll come up. Or I'm also on BitChute as well. So that's about it. That's all I would plug. Unless you're in the Richmond area, in which case, send me a message through the website and I'll let you know where to come get for dance classes.
Awesome. And I'm going to support your page, individualist.tv, and add it to our partners page on taxationistheft.info.
Awesome.
So we'll send some traffic your way. And for anybody watching, I don't know if you noticed, down here in the corner, there's this thing that looks kind of like an AR-15, but it's absolutely not. It's called the Opener, the Amazing Opener 3000. It will open anything from peanut butter jars to tuna cans. and if you go to taxationistheft.info and you click up at the top, it says win the Amazing Opener 3000. We are giving it away. Now, of course, this is how stupid the government is. It's just a piece of metal that opens things. But because of its shape, the government's bias has forced us to send this to an FFL dealer for the recipient, whoever wins it. I think it's absolutely ridiculous just because of the shape, and it's a can opener.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. this is our bureaucracy. But if you go there, all you have to do to win is enter your email address. And of course, if you invite your friends to enter, then you get extra bonus points, extra entries to win. So you have more chances. So go ahead and do that. And of course, I saw in the comments somebody was looking at my lovely little Taxationist Theft hat. You can get that over there at taxationistheft.info as well. And of course, don't forget to share this podcast if you're on Facebook or YouTube. If you're listening to this on the podcast, or if you want to, we are found where all of your favorite podcasts are found. So go download and subscribe to the podcast there. And I'll see you guys next time. Wait a minute. I forgot something that I wanted to do at the very beginning of the show, and I totally forgot about it. Which tax do you hate the most?
Income taxes. I think that's the one I hate the most, because it's literally your life that is taken. It's not you selling something. Well, you are selling your labor, but anytime that you get something, whether they helped you or not, you have to give it to them in a certain quantity as determined by them and a bunch of other people. To me, that's the most pervasive and the most horrible. Maybe up there with property taxes, but I would have to say income tax.
All right. And what would you do to get rid of it?
I don't know if I can legally say what I would like to do to get rid of it, but I would like to work peacefully within the system to petition my leaders for a redress of that grievance.
All right. That works for me. All right, guys. I'll catch you next time. Taxation is theft.